We're on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. And the last thing we mentioned when it comes to the Esreg and all the halachas of what is a kosher Esreg, kind of kosher Esreg, is what happens if you're growing it, you manage to put some kind of shape, you tie it up in a certain way, it's growing in some kind of mold. So then, not mold in a moldy sense, but mold in a, you know, in a sense that something morphs it, it grows into a specific shape. So that would be okay, as long as it still looks like an Esreg, but if you make it look like something else, then that is pasul. Get a little bit of fuss. So came in bria acheres pasul. So that was the last thing that I think we mentioned. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, second line from the top, Leishana ela came in bria acheres. It's only if it looks like another creation. Well, kibriya soy kasher, but as long as it looks like its own creation, meaning it still looks like an esrog, then it is kasher, despite the fact that you grew it in some sort of shape, so that it's forced to take upon itself a certain shape. So Gemara says, pshita, obviously, kimin bria acheres tanan. That's what it says, that if you grow it in a mold like another creation, you change its shape from what would be natural in any way. So what are you adding? What's Rava saying? Only if it looks like something else. Obviously, that's what it says. Look, Sricha Davida Dape Dape. It's only necessary if you made it what's called Dape Dape. So what's Dape Dape? Rashi says, Kimin Krushim Krushim. Kein Galgal Shal Rechaim Shal Mayim. It's like Krushim, which is like a water mill, you know? It turns the water, right? And that's exactly Rabbi's Chiddush, is that that is not considered unnatural for an esrog. So in other words, if you have an esrog that looks like a water wheel, because it has a lot of indentation, you know, you can picture it, right? It has like an indentation in the esrog so that it almost looks like a water wheel would look like because it's churning the water. So that's still kosher because that's not considered to be unnatural for an esrog. Itmar, it was stated, Esrig shenikvu achbarim. An esrig that has holes in it due to achbarim. What's an achbar?
Rat mouse.
Yeah, some kind of rat, some kind of rodent. That's why we have trouble understanding the Muslims, why they keep calling God a rodent. Okay, anyway. What? Amarav, ein zehadar. How can it be? How can it be that an esrog that is bitten away by mice could still be kosher? That's not hadar. That's what Rav said. Ain't it hadar? Obviously, it's no good because that's not considered to be a mahudar dika esrog. Okay, why? Because it's missing a piece, right? Isn't that what the Mishnah told us? That anytime you have a chaser, you have an esrog that's missing a piece, it's no good, right? Did the Mishnah say that? Am I making a mistake? Can someone go back to the Mishnah and tell me, is there a line where we said something about that?
Yeah.
What does it say in the Mishnah?
Yeah.
So what does it say? It's way back in Lamed Aleph on the Beis, right? The Ban of Lamed Aleph on the Beis. You guys see it? You have it? There's a Mishnah. That's right. It says, Nike v'loi chaser kol shehu is kasher. That if it has a hole in it, but it's not missing anything, your skin just got pushed in, so then that's called kosher. But if it's mashma, the implication is that if it's kasher kol shehu, which is what it says a couple lines above that, that if you have not the pitmasai, if it's missing the pitim, or niklaf, if the peel gets scraped off, not the whole thing, but only in one spot, this like it's cracked, Nike, but has a hole in it, v'chaser kol shehu. But if the hole results in it being missing something, puzzle. So what did we say about that? We said that it's only if it's all the way through.
That's a puncture. This is missing a slight portion. We're not like taking a needle, now it's just eating a piece.
Nipple.
So it's gone.
Nipple.
So is there a chiddush to this? I mean, it's obvious, no? That's what the Mishnah said. No? Am I missing something? Is he going to ask that? That's what it says in the Mishnah? I'm a Rav. We need Rav to tell us, Ein Zeh Hadar. It's not beautiful. You guys are okay with that? And Rav Tana, who Paul, you know, Rav was also like a Tana. He wants to write his own Mishnah. He doesn't like the other Mishnah. Is that what the Mishnah says? Am I missing something? What?
You're right.
So what's going on?
What's the problem?
Rav doesn't need to say things. It says in the Mishnah.
No, but that's the problem.
Not.
If he's not
to
say,
wait,
that is the problem?
No, I'm a little lost. That's what the problem is.
I'm reading the Gemara.
Yeah.
The Gemara has a question. The question is, an esrig that was eaten away by mice, it just gives a case. It doesn't give a halacha. So it's just like, it was set in the base matters. Meaning, it sounds like someone raised this as a shayla, kind of. It's funny because it's itmar. Itmar is the introduction of a statement. So it's a little unusual. But it introduced a statement, and it seems like it's to get to Rav. So that's really the point. Rav said that if you have an esrog that's eaten away by mice, it's pasul. Well, he doesn't actually say it's pasul. He just says ein ze hadar. So that's interesting. Why didn't he just say pasul?
It's not pasul.
It's not pasul?
It's not hadar, but
But b'diavad, you're yodze on the first day, second day, anytime.
Hadar,
yeah, I thought if it's not hadar, it's pasul. So he wants to give you the reason why it's puzzle. He wanted to say puzzle. He wants to say into hadar vipuzzle, meaning, but and you know already that it's puzzle. What?
Elaborate.
Why didn't he just say it's a chaser? I mean, because it's obvious, right? Because that's the whole point. The mice ate it. He's just describing the case if he says it's chaser. So he wants to tell us a chaser is a psul because of hadar. There's something going on in this Gemara, right? When Rav needs to make a statement, like mice eat the esrog, and you know, mice take bite a hole in the esrog, that's not hadar. He's obviously making a chiddush, but when you start to think about it, it doesn't make any sense. There's no chiddush here, so something's wrong. We're on the wrong track.
Maybe if a different type of animal bites it, it's still hadar, but if a mouse bites it, it's not hadar.
So you're saying it's not chaser?
It's not chaser because maybe it's like small of a nibble.
So you're probably, you're like, but it's got to be chaser because he bit it. You're trying to figure out a way where I couldn't be chaser. So we got a problem here because on one hand, it sounds like it's got to be chaser. If it's chaser, then the missionary said it's puzzle. Is there a way out of that? Is there a way out of it still being chaser but not being hadar? So that's where you came up with your idea, which is very good. Maybe it has to do with the fact that mice bit it. Maybe there's something else going on here. So that already is a thought process. We have to figure out how that works because if it's chaser, it's chaser. How do you get out of that? But I like your thought process. You're right on track. So it sounds like there's a separate issue here of hadar, aside from what it's obvious from the Mishnah. We already know if it's chaser, it's basal. Okay, so let's do it.
Can't just be like some sort of
some sort of what?
Defilement.
Meaning disgusting or a tumma? What do you mean?
I don't know, either or. Like, it's disgusting.
Okay, so maybe that's right. Could very well. I think that's exactly what Amiel is suggesting. That once you have a mouse that starts nibbling at your esrog, it could be we have to figure out why it's not just chaser. That's a problem. But let's imagine somehow we can get rid of that. Right. Let's say we can get rid of that for a minute for some reason. However we do that, well, maybe there's a separate issue called it's not hadar, and that would be exactly what Rav's chiddush is. He's saying it's not hadar, and that would be a separate problem that we have not encountered before. Right on target. I think that's what Amiel was saying. So let's see what the Gemara says. So the Gemara quotes Rav's statement. It says, Ein zeh hadar. So the Gemara, for some reason, doesn't ask the question in the way that we did. The Gemara says, Ini, how could that be? Contradiction to Rav. But by the way, just as in terms of learning Gemara, how come the Gemara doesn't usually just ask Svara questions? Why doesn't the Gemara just ask, why doesn't it ask, you know what I mean when we ask Svara questions? Svara question is like, logical question. Gemara does not typically do that. What does the Gemara usually do? 99. What? No, hasn't introduced a question. Almost every question that exists. Almost, right? What does the Gemara do to ask a question almost every time? How does the Gemara ask a question? By what? With certain phrases.
If that's true, it brings in certain phrases to, like, introduce, like, its ideas.
But isn't it true that 99 out of 10 times the question of the Gemara is from some other Brisa, Tosefta, or Memra, something? What do you mean make stuff up? We ask these questions all the time. That doesn't make sense, Rabbi. That's how we ask questions all the time. How come the Gemara doesn't see that? Then they're okay with things not making
sense?
They're
responding with the source that they're saying it doesn't make sense.
Because their questions are, that doesn't make sense because it's against something. You can't say that because I have a source that says you're wrong. Just because it doesn't make sense to you, that doesn't bother the Gemara because, okay, we'll make sense, we'll figure it out, you know. We'll figure it out. But if you have a problem, a technical problem, because it contradicts something somewhere else, well, that you can't get out of by, like, thinking about it. You have to make a distinction, or you're on the wrong track. So if a person's thinking something, and it doesn't make sense to him, but there's no source that's against it, so no, sit down, think about it a little more until you attune your mind into the way you're supposed to think. That doesn't bother the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Ini, how could that be? V'ha Rabbi Chanina, but there was a Ma'isa Shehaya, we know for a fact, Rabbi Chanina, matbil ba." Anybody know what that means, matbil? It means he dipped from Tovel. I'll read it. Tovel and a mikvah. It's one of those things that for some reason people have phrases either because of Yiddish or whatever. But how do you, what do you call dipping something in a mikvah? What do you call that? What'd you say? What'd you say? Who said that? Isn't it funny? A lot of people say Tovel. Tovel. I've heard from a lot of people that don't speak Yeshivish, you know. What? It comes from Litabel, meaning Tes Beis Lamed. Not Tough Pelamid, but Tes Pelamid, which is this Shorish over here, to dip, but it's just an interesting thing that people get certain ways of saying things based on Yiddish and whatnot. Yitovel. Yitovel, because it's Yitovel, right? So anyway, but in any case, that's what it means. It means to dip. Nechanina used to dip it, his Esrig, v'nafik ba. Okay, ready? What does nafik mean? Literally. What's the Shorish? It's one of my favorite words, guys. You gotta know this one by now. Thank you! It comes from the word poke. What's poke? What's poke? Oh. What's poke? Every time. Why don't you guys remember it? What's poke? Oh, it means, it's a very simple word in Aramaic and comes up all the time. Poke means?
Oh, you're wrong.
No? Who said it? You said it?
No.
Who said it?
Come
to go out. Poke means go out. One of my favorite Gemara phrases. Someone says something stupid and the other one turns to him and says, poke tani livra. Get out of here and teach your stuff outside. Poke tani livra. Nafga means to go out. What's a nafga mina? What comes out from it? Nafga mina. Nafik means to go out. This comes up all the time. Poke is a really, it's like a major shirish you gotta know in Aramaic.
That's not what I'm saying. Like, I think these arguments were like solely cliches of getting the
Allah. That's right. Oh, they're very aggressive. Someone says something that doesn't. Poke down, bro. Enough not already.
I don't know
where
it was. It's one of the
ones,
like, stop
giving me
that horse, because they keep ripping
us
like
a 24. Okay. V'ha Rabbi Chanina matbil ba, but Rabbi Chanina would be tovel his esrog, and what?
Go out.
What does that mean? That's what it means?
No, you would dip with it. Take go out with it.
You go out. What does that mean?
What does it mean
here, nafikba, to go out with it? What does it mean here?
Bite would go out, and the etrog, the section of the etrog would leave the etrog.
Here it means that he would be yotzei. It's the same word in Hebrew. What does yotzei mean? What does yotzei literally mean?
Yeah.
So yitzias mitzrayim. Yotzei means to go out. When we say you're yotzei the mitzvah, what does it mean? Means to go out with the mitzvah. It means to fulfill the mitzvah. V'nafik ba. And go out with it. To be yotzei with it. What does it mean? And he would fulfill his obligation with it. Please write this one down. Poke, 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 poke.
Why do they have to write it like that?
Okay. So that's what it said.
We can talk like this.
I gave a drasha a little while back in shul where I made fun of PTA. Who here has been to the PTA? What is PTA? So what does it mean to go to the to when you meet with the teachers and they call it PTA? You guys have that? What do they call it in your schools? What in the world? What? Do you ever hear people calling out, I'm going to PTA?
No, they say parent teachers.
They say parent teachers?
Yeah, they say parent teachers.
That's right. Everyone, in at least in certain circles, calls it PTA. It doesn't make any sense. Some person that didn't realize what he was saying one time must have said it. And was like, oh, right, PTA. PTA is a Parent Teachers Association. It's the people that are involved in raising money for field trips and this, that, and the other thing. PTC is a Parent Teacher Conferences, is what you do when you want to go speak to the teachers. Why in the world do people start calling a Parent Teacher Conference PTA? You don't go to PTA. PTA meetings are for the PTA to get together to meet about how they're going to raise money for the field trips.
What did it stand for? What did they mean? What did it stand for? PTA meeting. What did it stand for? What did he stand for?
But it's not what it is. It's not a meeting for the Parent Teachers Association. It's a meeting for the parents and the teachers. It's a misnomer. People just got confused at some point and started calling it PTA. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so I introduced a drusha one time with this idea, and I started just making fun of it, saying, it's not PTA. Everyone's saying the wrong thing. Like, I'm going to change the world, you know? So anyway, the guy came up to me afterwards. He's like, Rabbi, now finally I understand why people call it PTA. So I said, why? He said, after what I said. He says, drosha l'kabel schar. So rabbis have something to say when he started drosha. Okay, anyway. Let's go back to the Gemara. It says, but how could Rav say that an esrig that a mouse bit a piece out of is not hadar? Rabbi Chanina used to dip his esrig in something menafik, but meaning, and he ate it. He dipped it in something, took a bite out of it, and then he would be yotze with it. What? So that means there was a hole in it. Now, he's not a mouse. He's not a mouse. His name wasn't Mickey. His name was Rabbi Chanina. And no one ever heard of Rabbi Chanina the mouse. So, he wasn't a mouse. If you need to take a bite out of his ash, you're going to pair his yotze with it. So how could that be? According to Rav, it should have been that it's not hadar. Rabbi Chanina kasha masnisen. Why are you asking a kasha from Rav and Rabbi Chanina? Why don't you ask the question, how in the world Rabbi Chanina could do that? It's against the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says that a chaser is pasul. So if you take a bite out of it, it's clearly chaser. I understand that. The reason we didn't ask that question is because we can answer why it's not a problem for Rabbi Chanina, why it's not considered chaser. Why not? Likash, that's not a question. Yontif Rishon, Yontif Sheni. What does that mean? That the case of the Mishnah is Yontif Rishon. The case of Rabbi Chanina is Yontif Sheni. What? So what does that mean?
You don't need a...
Yeah?
So, I mean, the first thing you do, so you wouldn't be able to do it on the first day.
So take a look at Rashi. Well, Rabbi Chanina kashim as nisen. For Rabbi Chanina, our Mishnah has a question. The katani chaser kolcheh, who is pasul? Okay. Answer, bish, lo as nisen, Rabbi Chanina lekasha. I'm okay. I'm at peace with the Mishnah. According to Rabbi Chanina, it's not a question. Mas nisen, our Mishnah, b'yantif rishon. He's only talking about yantif rishon when it's pasul because it's chaser. Why? Because that day you have to take it according to the Torah. So the only time there's a mitzvah d'oraisa is really only the first day. And since it says l'kicha, it says ulakachtem, you have to take it in a way that's recognizable, and apparently it also can't be missing anything. You have to have a perfect taking. So l'kachtem apparently implies you have to take the whole thing and not part of it. So it can't be missing anything. What does it mean, yantav sheni? It means a second day, right? It means after the first day. Nafik be'Rabbi Chanina. That's when Rabbi Chanina would be yotze with an esrog with a bite in it. Afagav d'loyaya shalem. Even though it wasn't full, it wasn't perfect, that's okay. Because apparently that's not us at Derabanan. It's not a psul Derabanan. It's only absul d'oraisa on the first day. And after that, that's a good question we should be asking ourselves. Why didn't the Rabbanan make a gzera for the rest of the time? And the second day, since it's only d'Rabbanan, why didn't Rabbanan say you have to... I don't understand why the rabbis let us get away with that. But they did. So we can answer the question on Rabbi Chanina. It's not a question on the Mishnah, or Mishnah like question on him. Elo the Rav Kasha. But according to Rav, it's a question. Why? Why according to Rav is it a question? So take a look at Rashi. Elo the Rav. The Amar ain't ze hadar. Because Rav said if it has a bite taken out of it, it's not hadar. That's a kasha to Rabbi Chanina. Why? The hafilu b'sheni nami le Rav lo nafik. Because Rav apparently would say, you can't be yodse with an esrog with a bite taken out of it, even on the second day of Sukkot. The hamitzvah hadura ba'inan. Because you still require hadar. You just don't require, you don't require lekicha tama. Because you are mentioning Shem Shamayim on it, you're making a bracha and whatnot. Because if you remember, the way we started a whole perek was when it says, the Gemara started off by saying, sounds like it's pasul even after the first day. And that was when it was dry. And dry is not missing anything. It's not a problem of lakicha tama. It's not that it's missing a piece. You're not taking the whole thing. You're taking the whole thing. It's just very dry. Well, so what's the problem? It's not beautiful. It's a hadar. But kim the bina and hadar aleka. That's what Gemara said. It has to be hadar. Okay, so now we got it. So, when we're talking about a psul, ready? When we're talking about a psul, chaser, it's missing something. That, how do you know if it's missing something it's pasul? It's not hadar? Well, it may be that it's not hadar, that's what Rav says, but more fundamentally, it's not considered taking the whole thing, because it's not all there. You go out with a girl, she's not all there, it's not a good date, she's not all there. You want to take this esrig, and it's not all there. So that's not called taking it, that's not lekicha. Are we okay with that idea? It's not called lekicha unless you have the whole thing. If it's missing a piece, you didn't take the whole thing. So there's a chisaron in your mitzvah of lekicha.
So she's missing
okay, it was just a joke to get your attention. Don't take it too seriously. But it's not a lekicha tama. Since she's born without it, she'll learn much lesson later. Okay, anyway, so that's lekicha tama. So that's a more fundamental psul in your esrig than it's simply not being beautiful. If it's not beautiful, okay, that's also a problem. But interestingly enough, that's a problem that extends throughout all of Sukkot. How do you know that? What would be an example, by the way? Where it's still not, it's not missing anything, it's just not beautiful. What's the example of that? Lulav ha-gazel v'ha yavesh, dry. If it's dry, is it missing anything?
No.
No. But is it beautiful?
No.
No. So why is it puzzle? Is it not hadar? Right, so we know what's the reason for that. It's a different reason altogether. What's the reason Yarni Dachas is a psul? Because what? It's destined to be, because it was worshipped, you have to do what to it? Destroy it. Since you have to destroy it, it's not considered having dimensions in halacha because it has to be destroyed. Okay, so that's a separate issue. But if you focus on Yavesh for a minute, we've learned an interesting chiddush from our Gemara that the problem of Yavesh is not missing anything. There's no problem in taking her out. She's all there. But she's withered and dry. She's not beautiful. I think we should stop with the dating Michelle already. We're going on a wrong, a bad path. It's not beautiful, not hadar. So if it's missing something, we would have thought that's a problem for every day of Sukkot. That's what I would have thought. Because it's more fundamental. It's not all there. The Gemara is suggesting, that's what Gemara claims right now, Rabbi Chanina took a bite out of his esrog and was yotze with it. How could that be? It's chaser. Our answer is because apparently chaser is only a problem on the first day when there's a mitzvah, daraisa of lekicha. If to take it, you got to take the whole thing and this is missing. But the rest of Sukkot is a huge chiddush. Apparently, you don't have that regular halacha of lekicha. It's a chiddush. I'm asking, right? That's a chiddush. I wouldn't have said that. Because I would have thought it was more fundamental. But, okay. That's the way it is. That's what it's telling us. One second. But, if it's dry, it's not missing anything, apparently that's a psul. The whole sukkah. Because hadar is a psul all the time. It has to be beautiful. At least the part that you have has to be beautiful. If it's missing something, is it automatically not hadar? for what you have has to be hadar. You hear that question? I don't have the whole esrog anymore. It's missing. So does what I have, as long as it's hadar, is that good enough? Or because it's missing, it's also not hadar? Well, that would seem to be a machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Chanina, it seems, right? Because Rav is saying if there's a bite taken out of it, it's not hadar, because it's missing something. That means that the psul of chaser has two problems. It's chaser, and it's also not beautiful. So Rabbi Chanina, whatever you have has to be beautiful. If that's all you have, then that's what has to be beautiful. At least from the second day and on. You got a question?
Yeah. How can we just use as a proof that, like, it says, I don't remember the
Rabbi's name. Rabbi Chanina.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just wrong. Maybe he did the wrong thing. Maybe he made a mistake.
It's like, he took a bite out of it, and you said, like, he was Yosef.
Yeah.
How can you just say he's Yosef if you don't know what the actual of it, like the concrete to the end?
In other words, he used it as, that's what he's telling us. He used it as part of his Arbaminim. Why would he do that? That's crazy.
Okay, he used it. Does that ultimately mean that that's it? That was the Allah?
It's interesting. On the one hand, you don't always know why a person did something. So on the one hand, you would be tempted to say, simply witnessing a Rav do something, you can't use it as a proof. For example, there was apparently a Maisa Shahaya with Rav Moshe, where there was a certain milk or something like that, that he pushed aside and used a different one. And so from then on for a while, everyone assumed that that milk is no good, because he refused to drink it. Eventually, someone was smart enough to ask him, why didn't you use that milk? And he said, the container was empty. So you got to know what's going on. You can't just make assumptions. But on the other hand, if a Rav is willing to actually do something that is a leniency, that demonstrates to you that he holds that's okay. Not a chumrah, because you don't know why someone's adopting a chumrah. But if a Rav is willing to do something that's a leniency, he's making a statement. So famously, Rav Chaim Eizer would make havdalah on a filament light bulb. This is before World War II.
Is it to, like, prove...
To demonstrate that even though one could argue this is not really fire, I want you to know I hold this is fire. Don't turn this on Shabbos or we're going to give you skila. No, we don't do that anymore. But this is a serious business. Don't think it's not a serious business. I make havdalah on it. And that was a statement that the Posek Ador made. Here you have Rabbi Chanina taking a bite out of his esrig and using it for the mitzvah on the second day of Sukkot. What in the world is going on over here? Obviously, he wanted to make the point. I want you to know that that is legit. That's a big kula.
I don't know, it sounds interesting that they're like...
And if he's willing to do it, then that really means...
And he was Yotze. What if he was
Yotze? Here, and he is Yotze, I assume, means, and he used it for the mitzvah. Literally, the words mean, and he was Yotze, but meaning he used it to be Yotze. That's probably the best way to translate. He used it to be Yotze, yeah.
Sorry, I had to ask him one question.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, now my mind's dwelling on it. If you're, okay, so if you went on a date with someone who is,
yeah,
you know, who has a disability, and yeah, they're chaser, they're missing something, does that make you a bad person if you don't want to continue? Or does it make you, like, inherently selfish? Because you can't look past it.
You?
Yes,
God.
Everybody.
Not me.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I strongly recommend that in choosing who you're going to go out with, you do it in a selfish way, where this is a person that on paper makes sense for you to marry, to be happy with, and to raise the family that you want to raise. If you don't do that, I think you're doing a disservice to yourself. And probably that is exactly what the Gemara spoke about, if you remember, when we were learning Kiddushin last year, the day that we're here, that you're not allowed to date a girl until you see her.
Right.
Why? According to you, I'm not according to you, but according to that thought process, like, what do you mean? What's the difference? You know, some sent you this one, and you should maybe be missing one, she has a handicap, whatever it is, but, you know, you should marry her.
But if like, let's say you go out, like, on a trip or something like that, and the person ends up being wheelchair. And the only reason you're opposed to dating is because they're in a wheelchair or because they have a disability. How does that reflect you as a person? What do people think of you?
I don't know what people think of you, and it's just a certain extent you can't really care sometimes what people think of you. But
okay, not okay.
This is the most important decision that you're gonna make.
How does it affect you as a person? Like, you know, because
you don't want to deal with someone else's disability, which I totally understand. But like at the same time, if that's the only one holding you back, like how does that make? What does that say about you as a person?
It says that you have a certain vision about how you want to live your life, and you want to be able to do it in a certain way, and you sort of expect certain things from the wife that you envision is going to be. Now, Rahman al-Itlan, it does turn out that sometimes people end up in situations where that's what it is. Okay, well then that's what a kachbar wanted. But l'chad chila, I think we have a responsibility to ourselves and to the girl to choose someone that we're going to properly appreciate. If a person knows in advance, that's what the Gemara means. You're not allowed to mekadesh a woman until you see her. Because if you don't, you might find something in her that you don't like, and then it's not going to go well. So what? Get over it. We have to recognize who we are, and we have to plan accordingly.
Because, I mean, like, I can just imagine, like, someone said, ask me, like, if you, like, let's say someone came to me and said, I have someone for you, but the only thing is they're in a wheelchair, this or that. And yeah. I said to them, I don't want to date someone who's on a wheelchair. Like, that would make me look like a terrible person.
So, you know.
People would think that.
I know, but at the same time, it's your decision. Like, because basically, you have to spend your life with the rest of your life with that person, and so if you don't feel comfortable because of that, so why should you be forced to
I know, but other people don't.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I have a distorted mindset. There are character traits that people have that would make you not want to marry them, and that is in their full control. They can actually change that. This is something that cannot even be controlled. If you would say no to that, it's like, I don't know, it's not your ideal person. That's something that just doesn't fall in the lines for what you want. Why does that make you a bad person for not for declining?
Sometimes it makes you a bad. It just makes
you. Why would anyone think you're a bad person?
Oh my God.
Okay. I can talk about it later, but I do have to go a little bit early today. So let's go a little bit there. Okay, so now, Rav was the one that said, if you have an estrig that has a bite taken out of it, his taste was from mice. So then, it's not called hada. So the Gemara asked on Rav, how could you say that? But way before you came along was Rabbi Chanina. And Rabbi Chanina actually took a bite out of his estrig and was yetzi with it. Now how can you say that an estrig that's a bite taken out of it is not hadar? Apparently, based on Rabbi Chanina, apparently hadar is not defined by if it's missing something, it's not hadar. But rather that what? That whatever you have left must be hadar. And if it's not there, it's chaser, but that's only a problem the first day. After that, that's fine. How could he say that's not hadar? You ready for this? El Rav Kasha, that's what we're up to. But for Rav, Rabbi Chanina has a question. Amalacha Rav, Rav would say to you, because apparently he didn't, but he would, had he still been around. Shani Achbarim, mice are different. David Wright, Dimme Isay. Because they are disgusting. Repulsive. Okay, I like that better. That's a better word. It's yachi. That's an even better word. Yachi.
But now the question is, can someone else use an etrog that someone else put into?
That's a good question. That's also a good question. What's considered me'isei? What grosses people out? So, okay, so now back to where we started from. That's what we asked on Rav originally, right? What's going on with Rav? It's chaser. It's the Mishnah. Like, what in the world? What do we need Rav to say this for? Oh, and wow. So the Gemara has enabled us to make a whole bunch of distinctions now, to understand the Mishnah in a totally new light that we didn't understand before. Now we understand why Rav had to make his statement, and now we understand why it was specifically the case of mice. That's a pretty cool Gemara. So we just start off with a statement that seems like okay, whatever, let's just go through it. Like, I don't even bother thinking about it. It's just Rav saying a quick halacha. But do you see how many things came out of this when you really think it through?
So
a lot of chidushim came out of this. Yeah, even dating advice, you know?
But no, so was he saying that the real reason is because of it being repulsive?
His chiddush is that when something is repulsive to you, that's also a lack in hadar.
Because the Mishnah didn't state that. Basically, the Mishnah
not
just
at
said
all.
You can't
Mishnah never said anything like that. We never encountered
right.
that before.
The Mishnah just said that you can't, that basically it's not beautiful.
Hmm?
Right? Actually, did it?
Is that what?
The Mishnah just said you can't have a hole in it.
Yeah.
Right? And,
yeah.
But we didn't know why. And so his chiddush
yeah.
is because, well,
supposedly. Yeah. It's a new chiddush. We did not know that that's a psul hadar. Okay? Ikadami Amar Rav. Some say it was a slightly different way all this came about. Rav said, Zeh hadar. None, this is the opposite. Nonetheless, despite the fact that the mice bit a hole in it, it's still considered that it is hadar. Why? The Rabbi Chanina matbil ba v'nafik ba, because Rabbi Chanina bit a piece out of his esrog and he used it for the mitzvah. Well, Rabbi Chanina kasha masnisin. The Gemara says, oh, Rabbi Chanina, how can he do that? But the Mishnah says chaser is pasul. Lekashi kami yantiv rishon kami yantiv sheni. He did an yantiv sheni. Chaser is only a problem yantiv rishon. So that's the exact opposite halacha according to Rav. So that's a little bit of a problem. But apparently there were two different versions of what happened. Unfortunately, that's the darkness that we live in. And
so according to that opinion, would that mean that if he bit into the etrog on the first day, then it would have been possible as well?
Because of what? Biting into the etrog the first day is what psul?
Because of making hole.
Chaser. Because it's chaser. Chaser is a psul because... No, that's the important part. Chaser is the psul because it's not a proper lakachtem lachem, because you're not taking the whole thing. It's not lakicha tama is a lashon of Chazal. It's not a perfect lakicha because it's missing something. You're not taking the whole thing. Okay, very good. Esrog katan. I was at the dinner last night, the British dinner I was telling you about, and definitely strongly recommend this. Dinners are extremely boring. Bring something to do. And don't be one of those guys who just plays games on your phone in the middle of the dinner. Come on, be a tzaddik. Bring something to learn.
How is the food, though?
By the way, I have entire shas on PDF on my phone. Right? That's a good way to go. No, on PDF, I'm saying. Like, it's like a PDF. It's a picture of the actual page. It's like you can even feel like you're learning the daf. So I was learning this last night at the table while there was some serious downtime. All of a sudden, I start laughing. My wife looks at me like, what in the world? You know? But I'll tell you why. Yeah, it says, Esrog Katan. Our Mishnah said that there's a shiur for an Esrog Katan. Remember this? Esrog Katan is machlekes, walnut, or egg. What's the smallest it could be? Average typical one. Oh, with a shell, without a shell. Probably means with a shell, but it's a...
I would assume that's like...
Totally legit question. That's a real serious question in shiur. Legit question. Oh, my Rav from Bar Papa. Rav from Papa said, "Kimach leikis kan, kach machleikis." Just like you have a machleikis walnut or egg when it comes to the smallest esrig, so too when it comes to stones that are called mikurzalis. Anybody know what those are? This is how they used to wipe themselves in the olden days. Ew. Talk about not being a hadar. Anyway, this Tanya b'Shabbos, Shleisha avonim mikrozolis, mutar lahaklis misakisei. On Shabbos, three stones that are mikrozolis, these wiping stones, was mutar, you are allowed to enter into the Beis HaKisei, the throne room, eh? The place where you sit down and go to the bathroom, you're allowed to carry them. Now, that's an Isser D'Rabbanan, because you're not allowed to carry things where there isn't an Eruv. Now, let's just quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but there's something called carrying D'Araisa and something called carrying D'Rabbanan, right? D'Araisa means you have to go from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim. Rishus HaRabim has a lot of requirements. Josh. So here we're talking about, they're not going from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim. The whole thing is a Rishus D'Araisa is a Rishus HaYachid. That's what allows us to make an Eruv. What in the world are you doing? I dare you guys to make this room look like it's Adar. Can someone please do me a favor? One of the biggest reflections that this yeshiva is not a yeshiva is there ain't no Purim shtick in this place. I dare you. Make this place feel like Adar, please. Like things like that. Yeah. The base medrash eventually will look Purim day, but that's for Purim. But the yeshiva's like, you know, it's like, hold on, kimin hago no go, kimin hago no way. It's like any other time of the year. It's Adar! Come on, you guys! Anyway, you're not allowed to carry things on Shabbos unless there's an Eruv. What gives you the allowance to make an Eruv is that it's all a Rishus D'Rabbana. Mid'araisa is all Rishus HaYachid. Tinak is one big Rishus HaYachid D'Araisa. Mid'Rabbana, anything that doesn't have four walls around it is considered to be a Rishus HaRabim of sorts. D'Rabbanan, we call it a karmelis. Call it a karmelis. So you're not allowed to carry in a karmelis, you're not allowed to carry from a karmelis to a rishus hayachid, vice versa. So this is a problem. What happens when you want to wipe yourself and you don't have indoor plumbing?
How does this relate to what we were discussing?
Hold on a second, let's just go work it through. So you need to carry your rocks with you to wipe yourself. But the problem is you can't. So what are you going to do? You're going to use somebody else's rocks? You're going to leave rocks in the bathroom? Can't do that. You can't do that. Yeah, you got to have your own rocks. Come on. Hygiene, man. Hygiene. I don't know. But in any case, you got to have your rocks. So are you allowed to carry your rocks to the bathroom at Shabbos? So here's a very important chiddush. This doesn't apply everywhere. You can't just write off derabbanans because you want to. But there is a principle midirabbanan. Kavod habrios, honor for people, for creations, does have the potential to push off an iser derabbanan. There are cases all over the place where because of kavod habrios, the rabbanan did not make their gzeros. That's the right way to say it. Because of kavod habrios, there were certain situations of kavod habrios when rabbanan did not make their gzeros. You hear how I said it? It's not that derabbanan override, you know, kavod habrios overrides derabbanan, whatever. You know, I'm going to feel embarrassed, I can violate an iser derabbanan. It doesn't work like that. But there are certain times when Chazal say, because of kavod habrios, we're not goes there. This is an example, says the Gemara, where because of kavod habrios, we are not goes there, that you're not allowed to carry these particular things. So these are things you're allowed to carry, and it's just not deraisa, but midirabbanan, you'll be allowed to carry these on Shabbos. V'kama shi'uran, how much is their shear? What's considered to be avana mekorzalos? Rabbi Meir Omer ke'egos, Rabbi Omer ke'beitza. The same exact machlokas in shi'urim applies here too. Are these the size of a nut, a walnut, or the size of an egg? What do you think is the chiddush in this? Is the chiddush if it's too small or too big or both? So apparently, if it's too big, that's not not appropriate. Size. And if it's too small, also maybe it's not useful. It's not, you know. So there's a shear in what's considered the allowance. Derabbanan, to carry things, are these certain restrictions on these avanim mikrozolos. Does that answer your question? What's your question?
Yeah, so that's like
an answer. Okay. And finally, why did I laugh in the middle of the dinner? If a gadol kadesh yoyches, how big can an esrog be? So the Gemara had a machlekes. If you have to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand, and if you can't hold them in one hand, it's too big. Or if it's so big that you require two hands to carry it, it's still kosher for an esrog. Tanya, we have a brayis from Rabbi Yosi. That was the sheet of Rabbi Yosi, by the way. Rabbi Yosi is the one that says that even if it takes two hands to carry it, it's still kosher. Rabbi Yosi said, of course I'm right. Of course I'm right. You don't have to have to hold two in one hand. Maisa Rabbi Akiva. There was a Maisa Shahaya with Rabbi Akiva, Shabbala Beisa Knesses. He came to Shul, obviously on Sukkot, to be Naital is Lulav and Esrog, Vesreg al Ksefai. He had his huge Esrog on his shoulder. So I'm picturing this, right? You can picture this, right? Rabbi Akiva, I'm sure Rabbi Akiva had a pretty good personality. So he goes into the Beis Medrash, this is probably the biggest one he could find, and he wants to show that this is also good. So he walks into the shul, this massive esrog. Everybody turns around and they say to him, Akiva, what in the world are you doing? He's like, what do you think, guys? This, that's not an esrog. This is an esrog. Amar la Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda sent back to Rabbi Yosi, Misham Raya? That's your proof from that incident with Rabbi Akiva? Avim Amrulo, they turned to Rabbi Akiva and they said, Ein zeh hadar. That's not a beautiful esrog. Okay, so a very interesting thing. But like, you know, you gotta smile, you gotta laugh when you read this. You can picture it. Look at Dailan, look, Chazal, we're real people. Rabbi Akiva came to his marriage, this massive esrog, you know? And they said, Rabbi Akiva, dude, that ain't hadar, man.
I don't understand proofs like these. Like, they're just stories. Just because someone did something and then someone else said something doesn't mean something makes something right.
So that goes back to what we were discussing before, you know? In other words, secure. So we don't know exactly what was going on at the end of the day. Apparently the Rabbanan did say that. They felt that esrog was no good. Doesn't mean it was a machlokes. Doesn't mean that Akiva held it was. Or he was just doing it because he wanted to see what they would say. We don't have a lot of background to this case. That's why I said to David. That's David. Now David, I said, whenever a Rav does something that's akula, so then that indicates something. If Rabbi Akiva is really willing to be yotze with such a huge esrog, that's not everyone agrees about that. So that would be akula. That would be a statement that he thinks it's kosher. But we have, apparently the Rabbanan said to him, we don't think that's hadar. It's legitimately an esrog, but esrog is that big is not a beautiful esrog. So they felt it was a psul hadar. Could be Rabbi Akiva disagreed. We're not really sure what to do with this story at the end of the day. Big And, you know, I don't know, apparently Rabbi Akiva held yes, and so no, we're not going to go there. Okay.
Didn't they used to think that, like heavier women were more beautiful back then? Because it means
for
that
sure.
You came from wealthier families.
Heavier men.
Yeah, they were able to eat, and that definitely is true. Sure. You see that in paintings and all kinds. That's historical documented, no question. Right? Okay, let's go a little bit. Vayiter Mishnah. Ain't oiknetz a little of alabaminoi. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to binding your three out of the four minim, so you have to use the same species. You can't introduce another species. Now, it's always going to be the palm branch, right? Because it's really hard to tie something in arava branches or in hadas branches. It just doesn't work. But when it comes to lulav branches, it does work. So that's what it's always going to be, just for practical reasons. But theoretically, it could be any one of them. You have to, says Rabbi Yehuda, you have to bind them with the, we'll call it with the lulav. Rabbi Meir, Omer Meir says, afiluchud mashicha. It could even be a thread. It can even be a rope. Chud is a thread, means a very thin one. Mashicha is some kind of thicker thread, like a rope. I'm Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir, again, I'm Isaac. And everybody knows that the people that lived in Yerushalayim, they used to bind their lulavim, meaning with adasim and rabbis, with threads of gold. So, obviously that's okay. Last time I checked, lulavim not made out of gold. So they said, yes, it's true what you're saying. But remember, they bound them first underneath at the bottom with mino, with its own species, with lulav stuff. But then they additionally put that just for hidur mitzvah. But that wasn't what actually made the egged. So did Rabbi Meir not know that? Like, that's a good question. Like, well, is it a machlokes? Like, it's not machlokes. Rabbi Meir's just saying what happened. They're saying it's not what happened. You're right, it's true, but it's not the egged. The egged actually was at the bottom underneath it. Zok the Gemara Marava. When you bind it with mino, the same species, so, you know, a lulav branch is usually the way to go. But the palm tree itself does grow other things. The question is that considered to be a separate species or not? Because you're not allowed to, you can't be yotze lulav by taking one of the thorns on the side or some of this fuzzy stuff that grows along the tree. You can't be yotze with none of those things. Remember the rhino horns that makes up the palm trees, remember? So there are ikra de siv and ikra de dikla. The ikra de dikla is those rhino horns, and siv is the other thing that grows near the branches. You, according to Rava, you can even bind the minim with that because it comes from the palm tree. You can't be yotze with it. It's not good to be a lulav. So that's an interesting question. Is that considered to be mino? Because that's where it comes from. It is a palm tree. Or that's not considered mino because you can't be yotze the mitzvah with it. So what did Rava say? A chiddush. You're allowed to use it to bind it. Even though you can't be yotze the mitzvah with it, it's considered to be the same species as the same what? Tree. Right? Same min because it's the same tree. That's his chiddush. V'amar Rava also said, "My time with the Rebbe Yehuda. What is the reason for Rebbe Yehuda? What did Rebbe Yehuda say? That you have to have mino, right? And Remeir is one that said you don't have to have it, right? Kasavar lulav tzarech eged. The rationale, right? The question is just very quickly. Question is why? Why do you have to bind it with the same species? What's the difference? It's just a binding. Like, what's the difference, right?" So the answer is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you have to use mino, he holds lulav tzarech eged. The lulav requires a binding to be yotzei the mitzvah. If you might see min achrina, and if you would bring a min acher, another species, havechamisha minei, then you would actually be taking five species. Because it's part of it. It has to be part of it because it has to be bound. So when you pick up lulav, hadasim, aravis, esrog, you'd also be picking up the binding, and that would be a fifth species, unless you use the same species.
But gold isn't like a species, so if you just use gold, you're not taking another species. It's not, it's gold.
You mean because it's not considered growing from the ground?
Yeah, it's not a plant. It's not a
species. Interesting suggestion. Would we say that if it's not a plant, then maybe it's so different that it's not considered? Maybe. But Amar Rava, Mina Aminala, the Sevikra de Dikla, Mina de Lulavahu. Okay, you know what? I think we're going to have to stop from here. So, Blinetta, we're going to pick it up. We're going to pick it up from the Blinetta tomorrow.